person definitely not coming.
I know.
Well, what do we know? I'll move this one to last. That helps. What's AP? AP
action. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just seeing this in the car.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
All right, well, anyway, it's so we don't. I'll see if we find out. We can move it to the end of the final day.
We'll move to the third case of the morning, Frederick Kaiser versus Alan Uchtman. Mr. Scott.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Sean Scott for Petitioner Appellant Frederick Kaiser. Your Honors, the threshold issue before the Court this morning is whether Mr. Kaiser procedurally defaulted his claims of ineffective assistance of trial counsel and prosecutorial misconduct. As Your Honors know, the District Court below denied Mr. Kaiser's habeas petition on that basis. Judge Gettleman, in his opinion, concluded that Mr. Kaiser had failed to invoke a full round of the state's established appellate review process. We submit that that decision misconstrues this Court's precedents and the applicable Supreme Court precedent on the fair presentment requirement, and consequently, this Court should reverse that decision. It's important to recognize that Mr. Kaiser did present at every level of the state court process, did present his claims of ineffective assistance of trial counsel and prosecutorial misconduct. After direct review, he filed a pro se state post-conviction petition raising these claims along with three other claims. The Illinois State Trial Court summarily dismissed that petition as being frivolous and patently without merit, so he did not have an evidentiary hearing on those claims. He was appointed counsel, or at least that's what it appears from the record. His appointed counsel chose not to raise any of these five errors that Mr. Kaiser raised in his state post-conviction petition. Instead, appointed counsel raised the novel argument of whether the consecutive sentences that had been imposed on Mr. Kaiser for the attempted murders of William and Kevin Richardson should have been ordered to run concurrently rather than consecutively under Illinois state law. If this was a strategic decision, it appears to be a curious one. The practical effect of a ruling in Mr. Kaiser's favor on this would have only reduced his sentence from 100 to 75 years, and meanwhile, appointed counsel had effectively waived the arguments that Mr. Kaiser raised below, which we believe would have entitled him to a new trial. Mr. Kaiser then moved the Appellate Court of Illinois, seeking leave to file a supplemental pro se brief to raise those issues. He attached to that motion his proposed brief, 20 pages in length, which addressed at length the ineffective assistance of trial counsel and the prosecutorial misconduct claims. The Appellate Court of Illinois denied that motion. It ultimately held that one of the two consecutive sentences should have been ordered to run concurrently, effectively reducing Mr. Kaiser's sentence to 90 years. Appointed counsel then filed a petition for leave to appeal to the Illinois State Supreme Court. Again, did not raise the issues of ineffective assistance or prosecutorial misconduct.
I think most courts, including this one, have a policy of if you have appointed counsel or counsel, to not look at the filings by pro se filings.
I understand that as a general rule that may be the case, Your Honors. However, I think this goes to the adequacy of the state law procedural rule here within the state post-conviction.
Apparently it's not a rule because in a case you cited, People versus McDonald, they said, yeah, that's the rule, but we're going to look at it anyway.
Well, Your Honor, I think the way I would look at People v. McDonald is I'm not certain. The court said in that case they would look at it given that defendant's life was at stake. They did not articulate a clear rule against it in that case, Your Honor.
Well,
they did cite that they're...
They did, but they said death is different and we're going to look at it. So
That's correct, Your Honor. And in People v. Wadley, which we also...
It was
cite,
life, though, not death.
Pardon me?
It was a life imprisonment, not death.
In this case, effectively, Your Honor, I would submit that given the length of the sentence here, it's very similar. He was effectively going to spend his life in prison. We also cited People v. Wadley, to your honors, which is another case, was not a death penalty case in which Illinois courts have allowed supplemental pro se briefing. And
did he move to, in effect, fire or did substitute counsel? Because we've certainly had cases here where defendant gets crossways with his attorney and he says, no, I want to argue this, and you're not arguing it for me. So sometimes we get, it really usually comes from counsel where there's an irretrievable breakdown, so to speak, and he asks to withdraw and substitute.
Your Honor, did that
kind of an encounter occur?
From the face of the record, it appears that it did not. The record is silent on that issue. I think it's probably fair to infer that Mr. Kaiser did what, from his perspective, was the best route to get this issue before the Illinois state courts.
Anything in the record that illustrates some communication between Kaiser and his counsel over this issue about why he hasn't?
There is not, Your Honors. Both of his motions reference that he has meritorious issues for review that were not raised and argued by his appointed counsel. Unfortunately, the record is silent as to what sort of communications were going on between Mr. Kaiser and his appointed counsel, or why, in fact, as appears to be the case, appointed counsel failed to raise claims that Mr. Kaiser obviously wished would be raised on his behalf.
Okay, well, that would be at least an alternative that we could look at if, in the event that you think this other rule is too draconian, there is an alternative at least. It could have been.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think when we look at the fair presentment requirements in habeas cases, the deference to state courts is premised upon the thought that state courts should have the first opportunity to review their own or to correct any constitutional errors and to review the cases in the first instance as a gateway before the district court is allowed to look at these claims on habeas review. And in this case, Your Honors, we submit that by submitting these briefs, the Appellate Court of Illinois and the State Supreme Court were aware of Mr. Kaiser's prosecutorial misconduct and ineffective assistance claims. And under O'Sullivan v. Borkel, Your Honors, we would submit that that is all that the fair presentment requirement that is imposed on habeas petitioners requires. Once a petitioner has fairly presented his claims to the state courts, and this gets, I think, back to an earlier question, if a claim has been fairly presented to the state courts, then a federal court can and should reach the merits of claims on habeas review unless the state courts have relied on an adequate and independent state law procedural ground in declining to reach those claims on the merits. And here, Your Honors, we would submit that the rule against pro se briefing, to the extent one exists, was neither adequate nor independent in this case. To be adequate, the rule must be strictly or regularly followed. And as People v. McDonald is instructive on the case, Illinois courts in some cases do allow pro se briefs from petitioners.
In addition,
that's correct. In People v. McDonald, Your Honors, the State Appellate Defender's Office had already filed a brief to the State Supreme Court on petitioner's behalf. The petitioner then sought leave of the court to file his own brief, and the State Supreme Court said, recognizing the general case law that says there is no right to hybrid representation, which is cited by respondents in their briefs, the Illinois Supreme Court took note of that case law, but they said in that case they would review the claims on the merits. There, the reason was defendant's life was at stake. Here, Your Honor, given the nature of these sentences, I don't think there's much of a distinction between a death penalty case and this case, but as I pointed out, People v. Wadley is at least one instance of an Illinois appellate court reviewing pro se briefs after appointed counsel had filed a brief, even though in that case it was not a death penalty case. Your Honors, I see that I've entered my time for rebuttal. At this point, I will turn it over to respondent unless you have any further questions.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Hoffman?
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. I am Assistant Attorney General Jay Hoffman. I represent the appellee respondent warden in this case. Your Honors, as counsel noted, the question here is whether or not the issues that COA was granted on by this court were defaulted. The law is quite clear in habeas. There are two ways to default a matter. First of all, if the state court does not address something on the merits, but instead disposes of the issue through a state independent and adequate state procedural rule, then it is defaulted. Secondly, if an issue has not been presented, and we have been taught by the United States Supreme Court it must be presented in the trial court, in the appellate court, and the Supreme Court of any state, if an issue is not presented, then it is defaulted. It is this second default which the respondent argued below, which he argues here today and in his briefs, and which the circuit court found was the grounds for default. There's no question of fair presentment as they address in their reply brief, because it's not an issue of whether the facts weren't adequate or whether a constitutional rule was not presented in the pro se briefs. That's simply a red herring. That's not directed here. That's not involved here. Likewise, the question of an independent and adequate state rule is not what is involved here. These matters, these issues, were simply never properly presented, never presented to the state courts. Why is that? Because this court's law makes it quite clear that a defendant speaks through counsel. When you have counsel, you speak through counsel. There's no doubt on the facts of this case that none of these issues were presented. There was one issue presented regarding...
Well, that is our rule, but on the other hand, McDonald said, clearly said, we don't look at pro se filings when they're represented, except we're going to look at it.
The distinction is, Your Honor, it's not a matter of a state procedural rule. This is the lack of a rule, if you will. This is Supreme Court law. This is law from this court. This is law from the Illinois courts saying that there is no right, not that we're going to define that right. There is no right to hybrid representation. That's McCaskill v. Wiggins, this court in U.S. v. Traeger.
But the Illinois Supreme Court then granted that right by looking at the in fact, they in one paragraph they said, we've got a rule against looking at pro se filings, but forget the rule, or forget our prior decisions, forget our prior decisions, we're going to look at it.
I would take exception, Your Honor, respectfully with what you say, in that the court there nor in any of the other cases in which the state court ruled on this issue did it say, we are not going to apply our Illinois rule in this particular case. The rule
in that case, which I looked at fairly recently, they said, this is death, so we're going to look at it.
This is death, so we're going to look at it. But what I said was, it is not a state procedural rule, Your Honor. This is a matter of federal constitutional law. There is no constitutional right to hybrid representation, to yourself pro se and to counsel. The United States Supreme Court said that in McCaskill v. Wiggins. I cited you four cases from this court which said that, both cases involving federal convictions and cases involving habeas state court convictions. It's not a question of whether or not the state court applied or didn't apply regularly its own rule. It's a question of there being no right to it. And if there's a question of whether that was applied and where it came out, I would suggest that this court, in the appellate court, when petitioner asked to be allowed to file pro se briefs, Cook County filed an objection to that. That's at pages 88 through 92, I believe, of the separate appendix submitted by petitioner. And if you look at the bottom of paragraph 13, it says quite clearly, defendant does not have a Sixth Amendment right to have both representation of counsel and to also conduct portions of the proceedings on his own, citing to state cases, also citing to McCaskill v. Wiggins, and citing to this court's case of U.S. v. Trapnell. That's the issue here. this matter of whether or not they're claiming that it's not a regularly applied state procedural rule is simply a red herring. That's not what happened here. You don't need a procedural rule when you don't have a right. Procedural rules define the parameters of a right. There's simply no right here, and that is what the ruling was. The orders do not say that. I admit that. They are simply orders written by the appellate court in one instance and the Supreme Court in the other instance. But again, if you look at what was argued by the state state below, by Cook County, when they objected to the pro se brief, you can see that the law is not just state court law. It's law from this court, indeed a law from other circuits also, and law from the United States Supreme Court. There's simply no right to it. This court has said that repeatedly, and it should enforce that right again here, and not by the argument that this has something to do with a state procedural rule. As far as the fact that the Supreme Court, in the case you noted, did decide, well, since death is different, we will address it here. Again, first of all, that doesn't deal with a state rule. Second of all, when there is no right, of course, in their discretion, the court can decide, well, he has no right, but out of judicial grace, in our discretion, we will give him something to which he is not entitled. This court knows well that that doesn't mean that the next person coming down the road is entitled to the same thing. Because you give to one charity doesn't mean you have to give to another. Likewise, because one defendant is granted something through judicial grace, there is no argument that every other defendant who comes down the road after that must be given the same judicial grace. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I would ask that you affirm the denial of habeas by the Circuit Court.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Scott, you got a couple minutes.
Your Honors, respondents have repeatedly contended here that these claims were never presented, and in making that argument, repeatedly contend that they weren't presented because there is no right to hybrid representation. I think this, again, confuses what the fair presentment requirement is all about. It's about giving state courts notice of claims that a state court prisoner has. If you don't give them adequate notice of that claim, then it will be, as counsel noted, procedurally defaulted on federal habeas review. Here, the state courts had fair notice of Mr. Kaiser's claims. He appended his briefs to his motions, and once they had proper notice of the claims, then the question becomes whether there is a state law rule barring pro se briefs.
Well, his comments, or his your opponent's claim, I think, is that there's no constitutional right, and that was an issue raised in the trial court to have this additional items brought up by the pro se.
Yeah, Your Honor, I think that the discussion of rights is a little bit misleading here, because when you talk about no right to hybrid representation, that means that in every case, you would not have the ability to invoke this. If you are a pro se petitioner and you are represented by counsel, it's not true that in any case you could show that you have a right to represent yourself. On the other hand, on the flip side of that coin is whether the states have clearly established a rule and strictly and regularly followed it that says in no cases, essentially, or in all but no cases, you don't have the ability to file pro se briefs. And, Your Honors, I would submit that the Illinois case law does not establish a strictly followed, regularly followed rule against those briefs. Do you have any other questions, Your Honors?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. The case will take under advisement. I understand that...